Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey guys, welcome to the TechPoint Africa podcast. My name is Muiwa.
My name is Agania Ramon.
My name is Emmanuel.
And I am Bolu Abiodu.
It's been a crazy week in tech in Africa.
Yeah, really crazy.
Yeah, unless you're living under a rock, you've heard about the allegations against Flutterwave CEO, GB. I know him as GB to the extent that sometimes I struggle to remember his actual name.
Yeah, Olubenga Agboola.
Olubenga Agboola, yes, GB, CEO of Flutterwave. You must have seen the story by investigative reporter, journalist, or whatever you want to call him, David Hyundai. So we're going to address that, definitely. But it's so juicy that, we're going to be doing some fact checks. So yeah, just stay till the end, but let's talk about other stories that are going on this week. Let's just jump straight into them because it's been a very crazy week. Okay, so first of all, we're seeing a report that says Bitcoin fans are more likely to be psychopaths. I'm looking at Bulu with a side eye because he's a resident Bitcoin fan.
Don't worry, you are safe with me.
Are you sure?
That's what you would say, of course.
So right. What was the story?
Yeah, it's a very interesting one. So a group of experts actually conducted a survey on 566 people that were fans of Bitcoin, and they found out that most of them exhibited traits of psychopaths, Machiavellianism, narcissism.
Of course.
Yeah.
How did they do this study? Like, I want to understand the methodology.
So
it seems very biased and
one-sided.
Yeah,
but I think going through the article to the end, they did mention that they only did the survey on 566 people, so it doesn't mean that everyone that is a crypto trader or a crypto investor is automatically, already looking at me funny. So it doesn't mean that everyone, who is a crypto trader is, has those tendencies. But then when you really think about it, something that can make you lose a huge amount of money within a twinkle of an eye, you need some kind of mind.
but isn't that situational? Like, when they're trying to invest in something or they lose money, not that that's their trait, like permanent traits or all the time. Like, I don't know, it just seems like, to me, it just seems obvious. The statement, like even the opening statement of the article says the average Bitcoin investor is a calculating psychopath with an inflated ego.
Yeah, it's actually true that, like I said, it can't really be everyone who invests in Bitcoin, that will have these traits. But I've seen people, lose about, like, there's a particular person I know that lost about $56,000, I think, in a few weeks, and by the next week he was himself again. He was not
exactly so situational.
Yeah.
Like I was saying.
So, but for that kind of sample size, right? Are you not going to find people like that in almost every industry?
Exactly.
You can find psychopaths in finance.
Actually, they even said 1 in 4,
yes,
right?
Yeah, one in four actually own Bitcoin.
Yeah. Okay. 1 in 4 own Bitcoin.
Yes. 1 in 4.
Are the ones that were likely to show those traits.
Yes, but. Yeah. Everyone they surveyed actually have affinity for investing, taking risks and things
like
that.
So they cherry picked the, are you saying they cherry picked the respondents?
Yes.
I don't know why this is.
But I just guess it's just an interesting one, sensational to take the edge off. It has been a crazy week.
Exactly. It could be a nice icebreaker too. If you know a family member or a friend or significant other who is so big on Bitcoin and all of that, you just share them this link. We'll put the link in the description.
Don't worry.
Share the link to them.
I'm still the same person, you know, eh?
All right.
All right. Okay, let's move away from that one to something more, a bit serious. Okay, so Airtel Nigeria launched this week, earlier this week, and unveiled their first commercial data center.
Yeah, it's their third data center.
Yeah, so it's like it's raining data centers. I think last week or this week too,
It was last week.
Main one also
launched theirs. And it's also quite interesting because I live in an age when I was talking about the digital economy, how startups are popping up right, left, center, and everywhere. So data centers, for anyone who is listening and hearing about it for the first time, is just like a facility that houses huge amounts of data, and people, startups or companies can store information in the cloud. But beyond that, it also serves to improve connectivity. So with data centers in the country, when you're trying to browse your website, let's say you're trying to navigate Netflix, with data centers present in the country, all those big companies in the US and UK can come and establish a local exchange point here in the data center. So it actually helps to speed up connectivity. And you can access things like Netflix, YouTube, Google faster. So even if those guys don't have their own data centers here, they can tap into the existing infrastructure. Yeah. So a commercial data center like this, I think they're actually envisaging the explosion of cloud-driven companies building stuff, having huge amounts of data. And why go and build a data center yourself when you can just tap into the existing infrastructure? So Main1 had one already in Lekki. They expanded to a second one in Lekki too, and Airtel is also launching theirs in Lekki.
Why in Lekki? This is interesting. Everybody's in Lekki.
Yeah, so
although I know Main1 is trying to launch, supposed to launch one in Sagamu.
Yes. Yeah. So I jumped on a call with Funke, and she actually explained the...
That's Main1 CEO.
Main1 CEO, yeah, sorry.
You're on first name terms with her now. You assume everybody knows who you're talking about.
Okay, sorry about that. Funke Opeke, the CEO of Main1. And mind you, they just got acquired by Equinix last year.
Yeah, that was a big story.
Yeah, big story, $320 million. So to explain some of the nuances behind choosing Lekki. Lekki is just close to the shore. Lekki is where the submarine cable landed. So building data center, then Lekki makes it closer to that infrastructure. Then in Lekki, they are directly connected to the grid, the national grid. So they have 94% power supply rate, better than
The 330 grid, if I'm not mistaken. I remember when I told their data center in 2015, they talked about how that particular grid they're connected to really goes down. There's always power. Although they also have backups.
Backup, yes.
Like three backup gens and all of that. Yeah, interesting stuff. Okay, that makes sense. Why is it all Lekki?
Yes, so the one
I'm guessing Rack Center is in Lekki too.
Yes.
I thought Rack Center was in Oregon. Why did I think it was in Oregon?
So, but for the Sagamu bit, it's going to be a strategic position in Sagamu. It's still in the works, but they have to consider a lot of other things, right? Access to the place, the Lagos Ibadan Expressway, which miraculously is always seeming to be under construction anytime I pass there. So accessing the place easily, not just them, other people who want to access the facility. So they said it's going to be a strategic location, maybe to store data facilities that does not need regular... you don't have to be going there often. And there's no much need for it to be directly connected to the submarine cable. So most of those kind of data centers in the hinterland will just probably be strategic, not just any kind of data center.
But we can expect to see many more of these data centers.
Yeah, obviously we can expect to see it. And there was a clip. We have a clip from Funke Opeke.
From your interview. A tidbits. So let's
West Africa is increasingly important with a population across the region of greater than 200 million people having access to the internet, about 150 million of those in Nigeria. Then, you know, we can recognize why global companies are interested in Nigeria and particularly Lagos. So deploying, I think we're going to see deployment of more and more infrastructure to service the region where Lagos is serving as a digital hub. Yes, when we look at data consumption per capita in our region, and when we look at infrastructure density, number of data centers, or you could measure it in terms of how many megawatts of data center capacity we have, it pales in comparison to most advanced markets. So we expect in terms of data consumption, in terms of localization of data, in terms of the infrastructure to support that, there's a lot of room for growth, and we expect that we are entering a period of rapid growth of data resources in the region.
Yeah, a period of rapid growth. And Google, I'm expecting them to announce anytime soon.
Oh, their data center?
No, not data center. Their submarine cable is launching also in the coast of close to Lekki too. So everything actually makes sense when you think about it.
But you know, I feel the need to break down what this means for the regular person, because you know you mentioned something about Netflix and so many people. I mean, if you might remember a few years back, using YouTube or Netflix in Nigeria was, or anywhere in Africa, was kind of stressful, always buffering. But most people don't notice that these days.
It hardly buffers.
Unless your network is really terrible, like it hardly buffers.
Yeah.
And that's because of these data centers. The fact that these companies are actually storing well, most of them cannot say which companies are using them for privacy reasons, but all these main ones, Rack Center and Airtel Zone now and all of that, I think MTN has a few also, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm not sure about that, but okay. I'll confirm.
Yeah, but this is where all these companies store the data, so it's faster. Just rather than going all the way to the UK or the US to get your YouTube video
and coming back,
and coming back, the time it takes and all of that. So anyway, your article will explore that, and you're working on that in the course of the week.
Yes, the course of the week, and of course, big picture, what it means for the entire ecosystem.
All right, cool. All right, so you've stayed this long with us because we promised you something in the beginning. So now we are going to talk about it. You probably skipped to this point anyway. But if you did, try and listen to the rest after. But anyway, so yeah, the story of the week. Flutterwave CEO GB, again, I forgot his name, that's why I just said GB.
Yeah, he has transcended.
Was accused, or allegedly, he was accused of so many things: bullying, fraud,
sexual harassment.
What else?
Insider trading.
Yeah, that's a very big one that was very debated all over Twitter. So everybody is asking different questions. I'm sure if people have seen different tweets, different spaces, but they're wondering what's going on exactly. How are you sure people who are dropping opinions are not one-sided, or not being, they're being subjective? So you're looking to an objective source, and maybe you've come to the right place. Fact checks, Onome has been working on that.
Yeah. So several questions to answer, really. So one of the first is the question about insider trading, and how, if there's anything at all, if a private company like Flutterwave can even be investigated by SEC, that is the US SEC, because Flutterwave is registered in the US, if there's anything that you could say, okay, you can hinge this on Flutterwave. So first of all, private companies, insider trading. Actually, private companies can be investigated for insider trading.
Mm-hmm.
There's a case about that. It happened in 2011. And basically, the case says that private companies can be investigated for insider trading. And I guess you're wondering what insider trading is.
Mm-hmm.
Insider trading insider trading is basically you, a company or any of its officers or employees, giving hiding material information that could maybe sway you into buying or selling your shares. So, for example, company A wants to do an IPO, and to protect itself, it says that it's going to buy back its shares. Say it's a private company, say it's going to buy back its shares, and when it buys back its shares, it doesn't tell you that it's selling your shares back to them, that okay, we are going to do an IPO, and when we IPO, probably their share price will increase or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you don't know any of this. They are basically lying to you or misrepresenting to you the facts of everything. Mm. And you sell at a very cheap price, very, very cheap price.
Wow.
And IPO happens and price skyrockets and you're like,
I didn't know there was an IPO.
I didn't know there was an IPO.
Wow.
So yeah, basically.
So let me try and get this straight, right? Mm-hmm. You are the CEO, I'm the employee. And I have stock options in the company, right? I have a stake in the company. So you are planning an IPO, or you are planning an exit, but I don't know about it. Then you decided to make me sell below the value you feel, or at a lower value, so that when you now IPO exit, the price is skyrocketed and all the gains come to you.
Yep, basically.
Okay. Mm.
So the question now is was there insider trading in the case of Flutterwave because they're a private company?
So, first fact is Flutterwave raised money in 2021. They announced in March.
Yeah.
And before announcing, one of the screenshots that Hundeyin shared in his article said that one of the employees actually sold his stock options in February 2021.
Yep.
So, he sells at $3.5. That's really low.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to Duke Hundeyin's article, he shares a video of an investor that is trying to determine Flutterwave's share price. So at the time the raise was announced, Flutterwave's share price increased from about $3 to $20. So here is an employee. He's about to, let's say he wants to leave or whatever, and he doesn't know that Flutterwave is about to raise money.
Okay.
Flutterwave raises money, and before Flutterwave raises money, Flutterwave's share price is supposedly $3. Flutterwave raises money the month after he sells his stock options, and boom, Flutterwave's share price increases.
Wow!
So they raise money the month. Okay, so they announced. Wait. Announcing is different from raising, right? They announced in March that they had raised $170 million.
Yeah. Yep. Seriously.
This employee sold his stock options in February, a month before.
Yep.
So the question is, when did they know they were about to raise? When did they start raising?
So there's Edgar. It's a SEC-owned website. And basically tells you when a company has filed that it has raised money. So according to this site, notice of first filing happened on February 26, 2021.
Mm.
And this person, according to Hundeyin's article, the whole sale crystallizer on February 28, 2021. So basically 2 days after.
So 2 days after they made their first sale.
First sale.
Like of the first sale of that $170 million they were raising.
Yeah.
These employees sold. So the question is, did the employee know? Or was the employee in the dark?
Mm.
And then who was buying the shares? Because the allegation is that GB makes them sell the shares to entities that
he controls.
Yes. We don't know about that, because obviously Hundeyin's article didn't show any specific evidence to say, okay, this is a company owned by GB and this is the company they are selling their stocks to. So, but what we do know, or what we can say we know, is that sources close to the entire scenario said that it's possible that it isn't GB. It's possible it is the shareholders that are the investment vehicle that the shares have been sold back to.
So it's still insider trading. If
that's the case, it's still very, very shady, because they knew they were raising.
Yep.
They made encouraged an employee that had stock options to sell his stock in months, like 2 days. 2 days before? No, 2 days
two
after.
Days, 2 days after the first
after.
Sale.
After the first sale of, you know, the round they were trying to raise. There are many questions. Did this person know? Of course, the investors knew they were raising. So I don't think that's a valid question to ask. Mm.
So was there an agreement before everything was signed?
Yeah, we don't even know about the options. share options agreement that they have. Can we say for a fact that this employee was forced? Maybe the employee thought they got a good deal, but then the question is it insider trading?
It's really shaky.
Well, those are the facts that we have for now, so we can't say more than that.
Okay, there are other questions.
So the other questions, and the questions about Access Bank and GB. So,
oh boy, that's another rabbit hole.
That's a big rabbit hole. So Hundeyin says that GB was basically using Access Bank resources to work at Flutterwave.
Yeah, that's the allegation.
So the question now is, did Access Bank know?
And then it says there was a time in 2018 that the US SEC called, summoned them, and EGB and apparently Herbert Wigwe of Access Bank.
Access Bank, yeah.
Went. And the question is, why will Herbert Wigwe go there?
So in another interview GB did last week with a newsletter, so Big Trends, I think that was
Big
the name.
Tech.
Of Big Tech. Okay, so he was saying they went to San Francisco and when they were just starting, and he and Herbert went to San Francisco to sign up a customer,
Uber.
So it still doesn't make sense. Why will Herbert Wigwe
follow you to go and sign up? So that's even if that's assuming that Access Bank was like just a partner bank.
Yeah, just
like
a partner
like
bank.
Acquisition bank.
Okay.
Yeah, why do you need the CEO of your acquisition bank to go with you to go and pitch to Uber?
So GB says because he did in a blog article on Flutterwave's website in 2020, he says that it was because of the way he had worked with the company and the company loved him and all of that, that Herbert Wigwe decided to follow him to San Francisco.
So what that says is that Access Bank was supposedly aware. And maybe even Access Bank had some sort of stake in Flutterwave. Is that what that
according
is
to
at?
GB in that article, they are not a shareholder. Okay. They're not an investor.
But then that doesn't answer the question of the allegation that in 2018, Access Bank, there's a letter in Hodeyin's article that Access Bank wrote to Flutterwave saying they're owing them 212 million naira as accrued fees for switching and web payments and all
of that.
So I'm now wondering what was the origin of that letter? How did they amass that much that huge chunk of fees? Was it because there was no knowledge of that, or what else is it? Is the letter fake? Is it real?
Well, if we say that the letter is real, and going by what Hundeyin said, Hundeyin says that when the letter was sent, there was supposedly an audit going on at Access Bank because Access Bank was about to acquire Diamond Bank. Or, as sources close to the matter say, Access Bank had already acquired Diamond Bank.
Yeah, the articles of Access Bank
denying in November.
Yeah.
Then 2019, they announced that they've...
They announced in 2019 that they raised, right? They announced in 2019 that they raised. But there were already rumors that they raised in...
They announced in 2019 that they've merged with Access Bank or they acquired them.
Yeah, but in 2018, there were already rumors.
Yes, which they vehemently denied.
Yep. So, but Hundeyin's claim is that, which ties to those rumors, is that when they were trying to do the merger and acquisition, and they were doing due diligence, it was now revealed
that
the Flutterwave relationship
was owing about
221 million. 221 million naira. Oh boy.
There's also something interesting that I found in one of the screenshots that Hundeyin shared. So in one of the screenshots that Hundeyin shared, the person that is supposedly GB says that he owes Access Bank money. Was he referring to, this was in 2018, if the screenshot is to be believed, this was when he was leaving Access Bank fully and he was transitioning into his role as CEO at Flutterwave. So he says, I even owe them some money.
Interesting.
What was he? I even owe them some money, 221 million. Okay, this is quite confusing because It is that same year that Ian left his post as CEO of Flutterwave in October. So yeah. The audit was done around August. 2 months later,
Ian left.
Then in November, the news came up around in Premium Times, I guess, that is a rumor, and they denied it vehemently. Diamond Bank denied, Access Bank denied. Then it was not until the next year they announced that they've acquired Diamond Bank. So, meaning we were spot on, right?
Yeah.
And source close to the matter is saying, as at that time they were denying, it was a done deal already.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, what the hell is going on?
We have sources.
Yeah.
So, these are a lot of questions. Did Access Bank know? That's the question. It's not an easy question. We're trying to be very, very objective here.
Yeah.
Right. But a lot of it is pointing to the fact that probably Access Bank didn't know, or somebody in Access Bank knew
but kept it under wraps.
But it was not information that was shared with management, the entire management.
Mm.
So, which is why it now came up doing due diligence.
Mm.
Okay. So wild theories.
Yeah. And then you have to start ask, okay, one day he says Herbert Wigwe went with GB and E to San Francisco to answer to SEC.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, GB says
him and
GB quoted he and Herbert Wigwe went to San Francisco to pitch to Uber.
Mm-hmm.
They both went in both stories, they went to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. The purposes of going is different. But one thing is clear, Herbert Wigwe in both stories
went to San Francisco.
Went with them. Yep. So is
I think you're also forgetting Ian's side of the story, because Ian has made several tweets and Ian has said that Access Bank knew.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's true. He said Access Bank knew.
Then he also said that he was the only one that went to San Francisco.
Oh, okay. So there are three stories.
Three stories.
Okay.
One day stories, Herbert Wigwe, GB, and Ian went to San Francisco to answer to SEC.
Mm-hmm.
GB stories, GB and Herbert Wigwe went to San Francisco to pitch to Uber. In stories, Access Bank knew, and only Ian went to SEC.
Okay,
Ian doesn't say why he went to SEC.
He doesn't.
So, but okay, let's paint the three of them went on the plane, got to San Francisco, then Herbert and GB went to meet Uber.
Oh,
then Ian went
alone to SEC. Oh, interesting. But in all of this, two out of three times, Herbert Wigwe is a cooperating party.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and why?
Why
did he know? Maybe Access Bank did not officially know.
Yeah, but the boss knew.
He knew. Like,
again, we're asking questions here. We're not saying this is what happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because then the letter now comes up during due diligence, which is out of the control of. I mean, due diligence is audit is usually done by third parties, right?
Yeah.
So then a letter comes and says Flutterwave is owing $212 million. Like, there's so many questions. There's also the question of sexual harassment, which is very difficult to prove.
Mm-hmm.
Which other question is
there was something about the investors knowing. There's a quote from one of the supposed sources that says Greycroft knows. That is, Greycroft is one of the investors in Flutterwave.
Hmm.
And he says Greycroft knows and is covering it up and
about the fraud, about sexual harassment.
I think GB even mentioned in that interview he gave to the Big Tech newsletter that they lost some investors due to rumors from sexual harassment and all of that. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there's a lot of questions around that. Are we sure that Greycroft knows?
Mm.
Is the source lying?
Mm-hmm.
If Greycroft knows and they're covering it up, why are they covering it up?
Exactly. And then, what are these said shareholders that a source reveals to us? Like when they say the shares were being stock options being bought back from employees at cutthroat prices, and the allegation by one day is that GB was the one buying them back.
Yep.
But then sources are saying it was the shareholders that bought them back. Which shareholders? Who are the early investors? And if that is true, what were they trying to do? Was it something innocent, or were they buying back shares at cutthroat prices because they were anticipating IPOs?
Anticipating
big raises, 1 month apart from so many questions.
So many.
Oh.
Anyway, we can't really address all of them. We're even running out of time. But there's a detailed article that we will link to in the description, written by Onome, that has all of these details, fact checks. So we're trying to be as objective as possible, and we hope that when you read them, you get. I mean, it's our conversation starters anyway. So yeah. What do you think about everything we shared today? Some people may have forgotten we talked about other things already. Data centers more and more coming to Lagos. You heard me once see you Funke Okoke saying there's enough room for more data centers because there's so much room for growth.
Yep.
Right. And Airtel Nigeria has also launched commercial data centers. We talked about Bitcoin traders like Bolu, whether they're psychopaths.
Bolu's still looking at you.
And sadists.
Don't worry.
We'd like to hear what you think. You can email us at podcast@techpoint.africa. You can tweet your thoughts. Use the hashtag on Twitter, TechPoint Africa Podcast. And if you're listening for the first time, you can get this podcast
on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict. Yes, let me add more as
yeah, Podcast Addict.
Yeah, and anywhere else you get your podcast.
Anywhere you get podcast. Yeah, yep. And we release new episodes every Tuesday and Thursday morning. Once you just wake up, you will see the episode waiting for you. And so we'll catch you guys next Tuesday. Hopefully by that time, a lot more would have unfolded. Maybe there will be questions and answers to these questions,
yep.
Hopefully. Thanks for staying with us and goodbye.
Bye.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.